Welcome to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal. This week, Honey Mahogany.
The reality is that in District 6, between the Tenderloin and Soma, we have another queer voice, which is more poor, more Black, more brown, more immigrant, and that voice isn't necessarily being heard.
We're talking drag, music, and San Francisco politics with the chair of the San Francisco Democrats and RuPaul's Drag Race alum, Honey Mahogany. That's today, Out in the Bay. Well, let's start at the very beginning. You grew up here in San Francisco, didn't you?
Yeah, I grew up here in San Francisco, actually in the Outer Sunset. My parents were refugees from East Africa. My dad was in medical school in Greece on an Ethiopian student scholarship. And when there was a sort of a government takeover, he was in a student group, you know, protesting against it, and they revoked his citizenship. He lost his scholarship and basically became, you know, homeless, didn't have a country. And so he came to San Francisco, and my mom and her family followed him here. So, and then they got married at St. Gabriel's Church in the Sunset. And that's where I grew up and went to school, and the rest is history.
Let's talk about coming out. I like to think of coming out as sort of this lifelong process, this process of discovering yourself and then sharing it with the world. I wonder when your coming out began. When did that journey start for you?
Coming out definitely is, I think, a lifelong process. I think, especially for me, I think, you know, the ways in which I've had to come out have changed over time. You know, I've definitely had sort of like the moments where I've come out to myself. And even that was sort of in stages, right? I mean, I definitely was dressing in like my mom's clothes before I could walk. And I definitely had moments growing up where I expressed sort of queer feelings and was immediately shut down by my peers. Or, you know, because I was too, like, you know, very feminine and, not like, you know, the other kids in my class. Like, that also was a way for me to sort of realize, oh, there might be something different about me. I didn't officially come out, even like all the way to myself. I think in high school, I kind of knew, but I just couldn't grapple with it. I mean, I grew up in a very, again, very Catholic, very conservative family in some ways. I mean, you know, definitely very progressive Democrats, but like also, you know, when it came to queer people, I mean, we just didn't talk about it at home. And I think it was also a different time where I feel like just the society was a lot less accepting, and the church was definitely a lot less accepting. And so I didn't really even think that I fully processed the fact that I was queer until after I left high school. Like, I think I knew, but just refused to admit it. And so it was really in my like late in my first year of college when I ran away to Los Angeles to USC, that I finally came out as queer. And, you know, and even then, I think at that time, like, I remember that my first time in drag was for a student film that my friend was doing. And he asked me at the time to do it because he said, and I quote, "You're the only guy that I think would look good as a girl." So I did that, and it was, you know, very successful. I think I still have the video somewhere on VHS because it was like a single shot or like a no edit, like VHS recording. And then, you know, started doing drag and, you know, kept doing drag, and, you know, the drag one day just didn't come quite all the way off, I think is what happened.
Where are you at in your coming out journey today?
I mean, since I've come out as, you know, trans and non-binary, I mean, I don't know that, I mean, I think it's an evolving process. I mean, maybe one day I'll, you know, just identify as a trans woman and not as non-binary. I don't know. I mean, sure, the trajectory would fit.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm not ruling it out. But you know, I also really want to be authentic to myself and how I'm feeling and my own comfort level. And so that's where I'm at right now. In the future, that might change. But yeah, I'm happy with where I am right now.
I want to get to politics and San Francisco in a minute. But, you know, we're 1 week away, as of this airing, from the finale of season 14 of RuPaul's Drag Race, which is just incredible. You were the first San Francisco performer to appear on the show, and it took 5 seasons. Does 2013 feel like, I don't know, like 1996 these days? Does it feel like it was forever ago?
It doesn't. It doesn't. It feels in some ways it feels like yesterday, and in other ways it's just like, I can't believe it's been almost a decade, right?
Yeah.
And definitely over a decade since I filmed it. So I feel like I'm in a completely different place in my life. And I just, it's in some ways very strange to look back and think like, oh yeah, I did do that thing. And at the same time, it's opened so many doors for me. I feel really, really proud of the work that I've been able to do and really satisfied with that work and fulfilled by that work. And I just don't know that I would feel that same way if I was still only doing drag in the way that I was at that time.
So it was sort of a springboard to what you did next.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, while we're still on Drag Race, let's talk about the current season really quick. They're going to the finale next Friday with a top five. Angeria Paris Van Michaels, Bosco, Willow Pill, Lady Camden, who is from San Francisco, despite being billed from Sacramento, and Diabetti. Of course, you have to know Lady Camden. Is Camden your favorite to win?
Of course. You know, not even by default. I just think that she is an incredibly dynamic performer. She's stunning and adorable, and I am so proud of her. I think that she has a chance of winning, you know? Okay, I'll be honest. I haven't watched a single episode this season. I think I watched the intros. But like, in my defense, I've been super, super busy. And, you know, I think also in some ways, like, I've always really loved watching Drag Race. But in other ways, like, I've been doing this and watching this for 15 years now. And it's just not a big part of my life anymore.
But still go Camden.
But still, Lady Camden, do your thing. And we have all the confidence in you. And, you know, actually, I should just say, whatever happens, like, you have already won in all our hearts. So just have fun with this incredible journey you're on. And, you know, do the thing.
We'll see what happens on the finale. That's next Friday night on VH1. I want to talk about what you did when you left Drag Race for just a little bit. I want to talk about your music career. In addition to being the first San Francisco performer on Drag Race, which I still can't believe, you are to this day one of the few performers who sing live. Your 2012 single, It's Honey, is one of my all-time favorites. It puts me in like the just a silly, happy mood.
It is actually still one of my favorite songs that I've done, just because it's so ridiculous and it was just fun. It's honey.
Spread it around, it's sticky. So you lick it, and you drizzle, and you spread it around. It's honey, it's honey. Candy, red and green. around, it's sticky. Spread it around, it's sticky.
You're listening to Out in the Bay, Queer Radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal. In 2014, you dropped your first EP called Honey Love, which featured a few original songs, couple of covers. Do you have a favorite song from that EP?
Ah.
If you could please select one of your children.
There's only five songs. And okay, well, I will say this. I definitely do my version of Feeling Good more than I do any other song ever. I mean, and it's, you know, it's a really dramatic song. It's a really great sort of like drag number if you're going to sing live at a drag show. I actually also really like Take Him From Me out of the originals, which is, I just, again, it's sort of like an old school soul / new wave soul kind of vibe. It's also very personal for me. So I really love that song. But I think, oh God, no. See, this is hard.
You just like all of them, it seems.
But yeah, basically. So, but actually my favorite cover song on the album is Lucky Star. Like, I just love that song. I think it's just so sweet. I mean, it's also very nostalgic for me. Like, I grew up listening to Madonna and just being in love with her. And then the final song.
I can't.
Should Have Known Better, obviously. I think, well, in some ways, it's probably the most famous song from that EP just because it was featured on Looking. And it's also really poignant and a little bit more poppy than the other songs. So those are my favorite songs from the album.
All of the songs from the album. Why don't we play Should Have Known Better? This is from the EP Honey Love by our guest, Honey Mahogany. You're listening to Out in the Bay.
Should know better by now, but I just don't learn. You're with someone else, makes my stomach churn. I know it's not your fault and it ain't right, but I can't help the way I'm feeling tonight. No, I'm not mad, I see he's cute. I can't blame you for it, I ain't that rude. Would've taken him too if it was up to myself, but my heart keeps beating for someone else. Make it stop, take the pain away, teach my beating heart a new refrain. Learn the beat of the drum I'm banging in my brain, 'cause it keeps telling me I should have known better. Will I drive you home with your new toy? Do I tear up the mind, 'cause you're like this boy? I can't say no, so I suffer and bear what you can't seem to get, or you just don't care. I try not to look, I avert my eyes. I try not to care, so I whisper lies to a heart grown deaf, to the words I sing. They don't make you mine, they don't mean nothing. My beating heart a new refrain. Learn the beat of the drum I'm banging in my brain, 'cause it keeps telling me I should have known better.
just look me in the eye. Take the pain away. Teach my beating heart a new refrain. Learn the beat of the drum I'm banging in my brain. 'Cause it keeps telling me, teach my beating heart a new refrain. Learn the beat of the drum I'm banging in my brain. 'Cause it keeps telling me I should have known better. Yeah, known better. Yeah. I want you to see, yet I don't. What is wrong with me? Is there no hope? Will it ever end? Or will I sit and stare? Will I ever learn?
That Should Have Known Better from the EP Honey Love by our guest, Honey Mahogany. You're listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. I'm Christopher Beal. We have big plans for Out in the Bay in 2022, and we need your support now more than ever. Won't you make a donation to keep bringing queer air to your ears? All the info is at outinthebay.org. In 2018, our guest, Honey Mahogany, became the first transgender person to serve on the San Francisco Democratic County Central Committee, which is a mouthful to say. In 2021, you became the chair first. I just want to say congratulations to you.
Thank you.
It's a huge accomplishment. Did the weight of that hit you at any point? Has it hit you at any point? Like, wow, you made history?
I mean, yes. And like, I know that it is history making and I know that it's a big deal. And also, like, I just feel like I'm living my life and moving through the world in the ways I move through the world. So I don't know. I guess I don't dwell on it very much, but I do acknowledge the importance of it. You know, I mean, I think it's symbolic. It's an incredibly important moment for the trans community and for the Black trans community in particular. So I am very grateful that I get to serve in this way, but I definitely, I should think about that more and appreciate myself a little bit more sometimes.
Well, we appreciate you. You find yourself the chair of the San Francisco Democrats during a, shall we say, unique time in the city's history. For starters, on the east side of the city, there's a state assembly runoff, which goes to the polls next week, that has pitted two high profile Democratic candidates, Matt Haney and David Campos, against one another. What's at stake for voters in this runoff?
You have put me in a really tough spot because I'm so close to Supervisor Haney and, you know, he is my boss. He is my mentor. And honestly, I just align with him, very, very closely align with him in terms of a lot of the policies that he's pushed forward. I think that Matt is a practical progressive. He really makes sure that we're not putting ideology above the practical needs of our city. And I think that part of the reason that that is the case is because he is the supervisor of District 6, which is an incredibly dynamic district. We have some of the richest people and some of the poorest people in the entire city living in that downtown, highly densely populated area. And we just have to face realities around certain things that other districts barely have an idea of, you know, or don't experience at all. And the intensity of the suffering in our, in some parts of our district, especially the Tenderloin, where Supervisor Haney lives, has really, really shaped the way in which I think we have approached policymaking. You know, we asked for a state of emergency, specifically around overdose deaths. That's why we have been saying that there's a humanitarian crisis on our streets for so long. That's why we established the Department of Sanitation in streets, right? For the first time in San Francisco's history, we will have a department that is literally responsible for cleaning our streets and our sidewalks.
Which is something that Department of Public Works, it's not in their purview, right?
They are responsible for the streets, like where the cars are, but they are not responsible for the states of the sidewalks. Those are the responsibility of the property owner. But, you know, in highly densely populated areas, especially commercial corridors that are like filled with tourism. So for us to say, you as a homeowner are responsible for the sidewalk that, you know, generates income for the city in this highly densely populated area that's also densely populated with public, a lot of public housing, I think is unreasonable, especially with the state of homelessness in the city. Let's be honest. I think that the politics of both David Campos and Supervisor Haney are not that far away from each other, right? Because in general, even when we talk about moderates and progressives in San Francisco, the lines are razor thin. I think they've both done some really incredible things, but I fully stand behind Supervisor Haney.
Another political fight that's brewing in SoMa and the Tenderloin are the redistricting lines being drawn. And it's threatening to divide the LGBTQIA and leather cultural districts, which have been under one district traditionally. Community groups have been demonstrating at City Hall. It's getting a lot of conversation in these last couple of weeks here in San Francisco. Do you think it's important that we keep these groups in one district, or is there another side that we're not hearing here or that we're missing here?
This is a really, really tough conversation. I mean, in many ways, it's very heartbreaking because I think here in San Francisco, you know, as someone who was born and raised here, who's Black, I have seen the out-migration of Black people from this city. The city used to be 30% Black. We were the Harlem of the West. Oakland and San Francisco were the Black Panther Party started, right? And did a lot of its work. And I have seen the city now down to less than 5% Black people. And I think part of that is because we have not had effective representation in city government until recently. This translates not just for the African-American community. I think it also translates to the Latino community and also the LGBT community, whose consolidated voice wasn't heard until Harvey Milk was elected, right? And then I think through the creation of supervisorial districts and redistricting, we're able to maintain their voice in District 8 to continually elect queer representation. Now, I hope that through this redistricting process that that queer voice is preserved in District 8. But the reality is that in District 6, between the Tenderloin and SoMa, we have another queer voice, which is more poor, more Black, more brown, more immigrant, and that voice isn't necessarily being heard. That voice is also in those two neighborhoods in solidarity, again, with the African-American community, with the Latino community, with the Southeast Asian community, with the Filipino community, with the Arab and Muslim community, with the immigrant community, and the affordable housing community, right? People living in affordable housing or SROs, they are all grouped in this district, and they are such an incredibly marginalized voice that has no other chance of being represented in city government other than being able to elect a supervisor who will fight for them. I think it's incredibly important to fight to preserve that. I think there is a reality that District 6, because we have grown so much in comparison to the rest of the city, does have to shrink. I think it can be shrunk in a way that is equitable and that preserves these communities. I think it's unfortunate that those districts that have done their job and done their due diligence to try to solve this housing crisis are now being punished, whereas other districts that have not built as much are not having to change as much, are not having to sacrifice as much. You know, we are unfortunately seeing our communities torn apart and destroyed.
I was on the dance floor the final Saturday night at the Stud, a co-op that you were co-owner of. The building in Soma is still sitting there looking all depressing, but the Stud isn't a building. As the pandemic slowly crawls into endemic status and things kind of start going back to normal, I have to ask, just personally, are we ever going to get to visit the Stud again?
Oh, yeah. We are definitely fighting to make that happen every day. We have been looking for spaces for the last 5 years, knowing that we would eventually have to move. So we are on pause, but we are not gone. We will definitely be back. You know, the Stud had such a unique vibe and energy. And, you know, it was the first gay bar I went to in San Francisco. And I'm very committed to seeing it come back. And I know that there are a lot of people that are looking forward to that.
Yeah, me included. As a San Francisco native and a voice for the LGBTQIA community in pop culture and in politics, when you think about the future of San Francisco, what are you actually excited about?
I am really excited about San Francisco embracing its cultural heritage. I think reinvesting in many of those things that have made San Francisco so special for so long. And I think that means some preservation work. I think that means reinvigorating small businesses and nightlife and arts and culture. And I think it means continuing to build up our social services and safety nets to really make sure that we are taking care of our most vulnerable, right? We are a city of refuge. We are the city of St. Francis. And as someone whose family were refugees and came here seeking salvation, the American dream, and being able to build a life for their families. I just want that same opportunity for other families in San Francisco. We still have a very high immigrant population, very high monolingual populations, and they deserve to have a city that works for them because they give us so much. This is the salt of the earth that we're talking about. And I think that there is a future for San Francisco in which those people are embraced and recognized and celebrated. We have an opportunity to make San Francisco more affordable by building more affordable housing, right? We have an opportunity to revitalize our cultural districts and our historically vibrant and culturally productive areas and breathe life back into them. We have an opportunity to invigorate the nightlife, which I'm super excited about. We have an opportunity to uplift the voices and the power of people of color and trans people. And I want to see more, you know, women-owned small businesses. And we are a city that has always had a mind to equity, I think. Sometimes we failed at actually reaching it, but here we are with another opportunity to get it right. And I am excited for the possibilities.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, queer radio from San Francisco. My guest was the chair of the San Francisco Democrats, Honey Mahogany. You can find her on social media at Honey Mahogany. You can catch up on past episodes of Out in the Bay, get in touch with us, and sign up for our email newsletter. You can also make a donation at outinthebay.org. Our email address is outinthebay@yahoo.com. That's outinthebay@yahoo.com. Your financial support is how we keep this show going. Out in the Bay is a nonprofit independent production, which means we don't get any money from the radio stations that air Out in the Bay every week. We don't get any money from NPR. We don't get any money from the podcast. We rely on listener support. I want to thank Brad Payton and Richard Merck of Silicon Valley for all you do, and Melissa Hawkins for your generous support. Thanks also to KALW 91.7 in the San Francisco Bay Area and San Francisco Public Press and its radio station KSFP 102.5 FM for broadcasting Out in the Bay every week. Our executive producer is Eric Jansen. Our theme music was written and performed by Holly Mead. I produced this episode and engineered it. I'm Christopher Beal, Real Chris J. Beal on social media. Until next time, thanks for joining me out in the Bay.